Good morning. I'd like to invite you into a few moments of shared silence for contemplation or meditation or prayer following these words by Nancy Schaeffer. Because she wanted everyone to feel included in her prayer, she said right at the beginning several names for the holy. Spirit, she said, Holy One, Mystery, God. But then, thinking that these weren't enough ways of addressing that which cannot be fully addressed, she added particularities, saying Spirit of Life, Spirit of Love, Ancient Holy One, Mystery we will not ever fully know, Spirit of this earth, and also God of Sarah, Gaia, Thou. And then, tongue loosened, she fell to naming superlatives as well. Most creative one, greatest source, closest hope. Even though superlatives for the sacred seemed to her probably redundant, but then she couldn't stop. One who made the stars, she said, although she knew technically a number of those present didn't believe that the stars had been made by anyone or anything, but just luckily happened. One who is an entire ocean of compassion, she said, and no one laughed. That which has been present since before the beginning, she said, and the room was silent. Then, although she hadn't imagined it this way, others began to offer names. Peace, said one. One my mother knew, said another. Ancestor, said a third. Wind. Rain. Breath, said one near the back. Refuge. That which holds all. A child said, water. Someone said, Guan Yin. Then womb. Witness. Great kindness. Great eagle. Eternal stillness. And then there wasn't any need to say the things she'd thought would be important to say. And everyone sat hushed until someone said, Amen. And then, there wasn't any need to say the things she'd thought would be important to say. And everyone sat hushed until someone said, Amen. William Cleary had this to say about prayer. Verbal prayers make sense, I think, if you know in advance that talking to God is like talking to your dog. You say human words to your dog, but he pretty much ignores that in favor of how you smell. Similarly, whatever divinity there is hears the words of your prayer, but very likely ignores all you say in favor of the aroma of your heart, your kindness, your compassion for both your own poor soul and for your have-not brothers and sisters in the world. But the words of your prayer do matter to you. They give shape to your thoughts. They warm and give color to your soul and spur you to focused listening.
And the second reading is from Eat, Pray, Love by Elizabeth Gilbert. And she said, in the middle of my divorce, a book that I'd written a few years earlier was being published in paperback, and I had to go on a small publicity tour. I took a friend, my friend Iva, with me for company. Iva is my age, but grew up in Beirut, Lebanon, which means that while I was playing sports and auditioning for musicals in a Connecticut middle school, she was cowering in a bomb shelter 5 nights out of 7, trying not to die. I'm not sure how all this early exposure to violence created somebody who's so steady now, but Iva is one of the calmest souls I know. Moreover, she's got what I call the bat phone to the universe, some kind of Iva-only, open-round-the-clock special channel to the divine. So we were driving across Kansas. I was in my normal state of sweaty disarray over this divorce deal. Will he sign? Will he not sign? And I said to Iva, I don't think I can endure another year in court. I wish I could get some divine intervention here. I wish I could write a petition to God asking for this thing to end. So why don't you? I explained to Iva my personal opinions about prayer. Namely, that I don't feel comfortable petitioning for specific things from God, because that feels to me like a kind of weakness of faith. I don't like asking, will you change this or that thing in my life that's difficult for me, because who knows? God might want me to be facing that particular challenge for a reason. Instead, I feel more comfortable praying for the courage to face whatever occurs in my life with equanimity, no matter how things turn out. Iva listened politely, then asked, where'd you get that stupid idea? What do you mean? Where did you get the idea that you aren't allowed to petition the universe with prayer? You are part of the universe, Liz. You're a constituent. You have every entitlement to participate in the actions of the universe and to let your feelings be known. So put your opinion out there. Make your case. Believe me, it will at least be taken into consideration. Really? All this was news to me. Really? Listen, if you were to write a petition to God right now, what would it say?
If you were to write a petition to the universe right now, what would it say? I first came to prayer in a backdoor sort of way. I was in a bookstore, browsing titles in the religion section, and I came across a book on the Psalms, the sung prayers of the Hebrew Bible. I pulled it out and read the introduction. The Bible, it said, is a record of people's encounters with the holy. It records their attempt to describe what they heard or saw when the divine reached out to them. In the Psalms, however, something different is happening. In the Psalms, humanity talks back to God. I have to admit, the idea of talking back to God appealed to me. At the time, I had very little contact with religion outside of the mainstream media and my own historical studies. I wasn't sure what I thought about the idea of God, but I liked the idea of talking back, whether it was to God or the universe, and whether or not he, she, it, they was or were listening. So I read further. And I found myself moved by what was there. The rawness, the range of emotion. Not just praise, which I expected and half dreaded, but anger, fear, despair, a little bit of hope. Many of the verses were petitions. The psalmist calls for help when troubles of all sorts erupt, when illness strikes, when beset by enemies. Save me. Have mercy on me. All my bones are disjointed. My heart is like wax melting within me. My vigor dries up like a shard, and I am tossed about. I could not help but feel something rise up in me in response. Recognition, perhaps, or empathy. I didn't think about prayer again until I went back to school to study for the Unitarian ministry in a Christian seminary. Not having a lot of experience with Christianity, as I grew up UU, I was somewhat nervous as well as curious. I remember sitting in my very first class. I assumed everyone else knew so much more about the Bible than I did. Not true, as I later discovered. But what they did have was ways of being that were new to me. When my professor of New Testament studies walked into the room on the first day of class, he put down his stack of books and papers, turned to face us, and said, "The Lord be with you," just as easily and comfortably as if he were saying hello. And just as easily and comfortably, the great majority of the class said, responded, "And also with you." What was that? I was both intrigued and disturbed. And I began to watch how different teachers began their classes with prayer. I noticed that I felt included in some prayers, but not in others. I noticed how some images really struck me. Being adrift at sea. Being rooted in the earth as a tree. These images sometimes came back to me later in the day or later in the week, like companions on my journey. Often it was the quality, the presence of the speaker that brought the words to me and stayed with me. In short, I realized that prayer was an experience that sometimes fit for me and sometimes didn't, and I was curious to know more. This is very much the approach taken by the English-Swiss philosopher and atheist Alain de Botton, author of the recent book Religion for Atheists. De Botton points out that atheists sometimes devote a considerable amount of energy to disproving the existence of God. But perhaps, says de Botton, the existence or non-existence of God is actually the least interesting thing about religion. What would happen, he asks, if we put aside questions of belief as being not particularly informative, either you believe or you don't, and instead looked at the practices and how they affect people and how they affect our society? When I tried to imagine what a prayer practice might look like for me, my first stumbling block was the to part. To whom or to what, if anything, would I pray? Did I need to figure that out before I prayed? How would an agnostic pray? Or an atheist? Can atheists pray? Everyone I talked to seemed to think that it was the personal quality of prayer that was important. A friend of mine said, "It's like you are speaking to someone." "It's like" turned out to be the most important part of that sentence. Not all prayers begin with a letter-like, "Dear God" salutation that I imagined they somehow had to. Some prayers don't even identify the intended recipient. In some traditions, there are prayers that start off with vows. The 8th century monk Shantideva dove right into his prayer chant beginning, "May I." May I be a protector to those without protection. May I be a leader for those who journey. A boat, a bridge for those desiring the furthest shore, he said. When Unitarian minister Laurel Hallman was asked about prayer, she said, "The most important thing is to cover your own side of the street. Let the other side take care of itself," as they say at Alcoholics Anonymous. There is a place for theological debate, and it isn't in prayer. When praying, she says, it's better to remember the Buddha's advice. When asked if gods and goddesses really exist, he said, "That is a question which does not tend toward edification." Worrying too much about to whom we are praying doesn't help us cultivate the aroma of our hearts. Of course it matters what words I use. If I'm praying alone, the words must have meaning. They must resonate with me. and not distract me with unnecessary questions. And if I'm praying in a group, offering a few words before a meal, or to open an interfaith gathering, the words I use will determine whether or not other people in the room feel included, and that is important to me. So the question of how to begin a prayer is not so much a question about belief, as it is a question of what helps me open up to my experience, and what helps the people around me feel welcome and included. For me, being personal is important. There's a difference between saying Kevin and Mr. Smith. Formal can feel distant. It would feel odd to call a close friend by their title and last name when I want to tell them something important about me. An intimate one-on-one conversation has certain associations that go along with it. I am more likely to be in touch with my own emotions, for one. So I use whatever invocation seems appropriate in the moment, depending on what I need to say. What helps you to open up? To let go of the layers of protection that we sometimes need in our lives. Perhaps it is naming spirit of life, or the spirit of truth and justice, or perhaps it is speaking to the glory of nature, or a particular tree, or to God, or goddess, or greatest source, closest hope, great kindness, refuge. Perhaps it works to begin with a petition. Please, help my son, help my daughter, please let this pass. Or maybe it's a simple vow. The first prayer I ever said before I even knew it was a prayer was, may this work be useful. Sometimes it is the most daring address that brings life to the conversation. Those of you who've studied the life of Jesus probably know that when he said Abba in his prayers, he wasn't saying Father. The Aramaic Abba is much better translated as Dad or Daddy. In spite of how it's been used by various church institutions, in its origin this was less about patriarchy and more about intimacy, a kind of shockingly embarrassing intimacy. If you were to write a petition to the universe right now, what would it say? The content of prayer is meant to get at the heart of what's going on in our lives. As I tried out a practice of spontaneous prayer, I discovered that the great majority of my prayers could be grouped into four categories. I call them wow, ouch, please, and thank you. Wow is about wonder. It's the sense of awe and expansiveness that comes from watching the sunrise or holding a newborn child. Ouch is for all the hurts and disappointments, the losses, the betrayals, the moment I realized that my words hurt someone I loved, the great griefs that turn over the foundation stones of our lives. These prayers give us a container for crying out with our pain and suffering. Please is the petition. It's the desire for something outside myself to change. Please is the most famous prayer of all. Help me. It is the petition some are thinking of when they say there are no atheists in foxholes. But I think it is more likely that what we find in foxholes are real human beings, people who are scared and yearning and hurting. And they cry out. They ask, they beg. And it doesn't have anything to do with what they believe. Because this is what we do when we cannot fix things ourselves. We cry out. Please is an admission that I am not in 100% control of what is going on around me or even inside me. Not that I ever was, but something happened in my life that made me realize this anew, and I need to cry out. The other cry is thank you. I used to have a magnet on my fridge that said, if the only prayer you say in your whole life is thank you, that would be enough. Wisdom courtesy of the early 14th century German mystic, Meister Eckhart. Thank you is for all that I have received unearned. It is for the gift of life. Thank you is for the sensation of mud oozing up between my toes and how good it feels. It is for the stranger who helped me with my bags when my giant suitcase began its slow-motion tumble down the escalator in a Toronto rush hour. As with please, thank you acknowledges that which is outside of my control, only this time with gratitude. From wow to ouch, prayer acknowledges the impact of life on my innermost self. And from please to thank you, prayer acknowledges my response. And if this were all that was happening in prayer, it would be enough. An important exercise in self-awareness. But prayer is more than putting thoughts and feelings into words. It's also about what happens when I voice them. Somehow, in describing a situation, a reaction, a question, and sending it out to the universe, I am changed. Somehow, sometimes, by making a regular practice of expressing my hopes and dreams in prayer, I am making a subtle change in how I relate to the world around me. Perhaps I'm learning to take more responsibility for my side of the street. Perhaps it's that in speaking up, I am acknowledging my own place in the web of life, learning to inhabit it more fully, and being able to sense the rest of the web around me. Often when I pray, I get clear about what is and is not mine, what is and is not true. It's a trial and error process. I offer my thoughts to the universe, for example, distress about harsh words spoken to a friend, and my own regret rings hollow in the void. And so I try again. I dig deeper into my own conscience, open myself to whatever insights are there, wherever they come from. And I just might be able to speak from a place of love when I see my friend the next day. This sort of prayer can be humbling in the best way. It helps me to find my place, my ground. If we believe that we are constituent parts of the universe, part of an interdependent web of all existence, if we really believe that we are part of the web of life, then how we understand our relationship to that larger web will have an impact on our lives and our relations with the people around us and the earth that we walk on. Whether we are talking about forgiveness or reconciliation or healing, transformation can and does happen. And that is no small thing. It is the real miracle that happens in our lives. The world needs us to inhabit our lives fully, to connect with each other in real and meaningful ways. The spiritual practice of prayer is about bringing our heart to life. It is a practice found in many different religions, and it is available to any of us, irrespective of our beliefs. It may not be for everyone. It may not be for you. But I would contend that the only way to know that for sure is to try it, to see how it fits. There's a Rumi poem about a man who cried, "Allah, Allah," until his lips became sweet with the sound. A skeptic who heard him said, "Well, I've heard you calling out, but where is the answer to your prayer? Have you ever gotten a response?" The man had no answer to that, and he sadly abandoned his prayers and went to sleep. Then in his dreams, he saw Khazir, the soul guide, walking toward him through a garden. "Why did you stop praising?" Khazir asked him. "Because I never heard anything back," the man said. "Ah," said Khazir, "this longing you voice, this is the return message." Rumi says, "The grief you cry out from draws you toward union. Your pure sadness that wants to help is the secret cup. Listen to the moan of a dog for its master. That whining is the connection. There are love dogs no one knows the names of. Give your life to be one of them. There are love dogs no one knows the names of. Give your life to be one of them. May it be so. Amen. Blessed be.
And now we'll take a few moments to have the congregation ask some questions. And I see Evan here.
Thank you, Karen. And I was going to ask you this question. I'm pretty sure you have an answer for this. Is consciousness in one's values the ultimate form of prayer?
It could be. I think that's something that each of us have to discover for ourselves.
I'm just curious about something. You trained in a Christian seminary, and I'm interested in how you were received and how your contributions in class and essays and so forth, you would have a particular perspective that might be a little different. And I'd be interested to hear how that played out.
There were four Unitarians in my seminary when I started, and I discovered that we were greatly appreciated by the professors who delighted in the questions that we asked. So we were greatly valued, and although there were some difficult conversations, there were many good conversations. And my seminary is an ecumenical seminary, so there were people from many different traditions with strong feelings about many different things, so I was not alone. There was always somebody in the room. Anytime a statement was made about a fact of belief, there was always somebody in the room who was uncomfortable, and sometimes there were people more uncomfortable than me.
Thank you, Karen. That was really very thought-provoking for me. I was thinking, as you were talking about the different kinds of prayer, about the one that really has impressed me over the last few years, and it's the one that probably wasn't offered as a prayer, but I think it would do as a prayer, and that's Rodney King, the black who was beaten in Los Angeles by the police. I think it was Los Angeles. He said, "Can't we all just get along?"
Was your seminary training just part of the Unitarian ministerial training, and how long?
Well, there's how long you can do it and how long I took to do it. I was working and going to school part-time, so it took me 8 years. You can do it in a lot less than that. It's a 3-year Master's of Divinity degree from a seminary. That's the most common thing. And because many Unitarians don't get to go to a Unitarian seminary, there's a whole reading list and things to do for those of us who wanted to get our Unitarian heritage more fully. And there's also a practical component with field placements and internships. So there's a lot that goes into it, including a placement in a Unitarian congregation and usually a field placement in a social justice type of setting and field placement in a hospital as a hospital chaplain. So there's a lot that goes into it. Does that answer your question?
I'm still not sure. Some of that time you were in a Unitarian training center at all or not? Like you mentioned.
I took some online courses with Star King, which is the Unitarian seminary in Berkeley, California. And I was lucky enough to be living in Vancouver, where there's lots of Unitarian ministers present who would come onto campus and do things with us.
Right. Thank you.
have a question. How has prayer informed your life?
Good question. The superficial answer is that it's given me a greater appreciation from people who do have an active prayer life. In a certain sense, I tried it on to see how it fit for me. And just experiencing what it did for me, I had more appreciation for people who come from traditions where prayer is really an active part of what they're doing. And it does inform my ministry to a certain extent. I'm comfortable asking people if they pray and if they want to pray, and sometimes they have no idea, and we talk about what their beliefs are and what they might want to say. For me, it's a very personal way of speaking, and I think, like many Unitarians, I tend to be fairly abstract and like intellectual discussion, and prayer forces me to be personal. And I think there's a benefit in that, because I'm a whole person, I'm not just a head. You know, I have a body, and sometimes some of the prayer traditions, I do yoga as a spiritual practice, and that's very much about an embodied form of prayer. I think it's good for us to explore the different ways, and whatever our natural inclination is, to try things that are different and not necessarily comfortable for us. It helps us explore other dimensions of our own selves that we might not be aware of, and helps us connect more with other people.
I guess for myself, thank you. I have a new appreciation for prayer from what you're saying. I think I've got a lot of disappointment from prayer as a child. And so I feel that I'm more active on an earthly side of prayer, as in just creating actions, like just doing something and talking to people that I think will make a difference. And so I guess that could be a form of prayer as well, by actually taking those conversations to people. And maybe that's something that Catholics do as well, like talking to saints or, you know, other, you know, channeling their thoughts or their petitions. So anyways, thank you for the appreciation back again.
You're very welcome. I think that, you know, there's a tradition in the mystical traditions talk about, you know, praying all day long, the Benedictines, and that sense that whether they're gardening or whether they're in the chapel or whether they're doing service in the community, that is, it is a form of prayer. So it has to do with the spirit that we bring to the actions that we do. Yeah.
Hi, Karen.
Oh, hi, Joanne.
I'll stand up so you can see. I just want to see if I can maybe restate my own understanding of what you're saying, that prayer or meditation, whatever you want to call it, it's a way of stating our fears out loud to ourselves, like almost acknowledging our fears, I guess. Mm-hmm. And so for a theist, where they would be saying their fears out loud to a god or a goddess or whatever, for me, I'm not sure where they'd be going, but I think it's just almost like giving us permission to say, name those fears.
Yeah. I think in the naming of them, I know I've done quite a bit of journal writing as prayer, and in the writing something down and seeing it outside myself, new insights come as a result of that. And it can be, the act of naming can be very powerful.
I'm probably the last person we have time for, so I would like to share a prayer that I do every day, and which many of you, I think, know. May I be free from danger. May I enjoy mental happiness. May I enjoy physical happiness. And may I enjoy a sense of well-being. Mm. And those of you who have read something about Buddhism know that that is the fundamental prayer.
Thank you.
And thank everyone for their questions. That was very interesting, and I really appreciated the topic. Bouncing back and forth as I do, it helps inform my own search.